most people don't propose as soon as they've met somebody. Whereas when we translate that into an online transaction, what happens when you visit an e-commerce store? Within seconds, there's a pop-up saying, do you want a discount? Do you want to do this? Do you want to sign up for our email newsletter? Do you want to... Whoa. Mm-hmm. Like, time out. Mm-hmm. Let's get to know each other a little bit.
Hey, Jason. How are you doing today?
I'm very good. How are you?
I am excellent. I am so excited to chat with you today. I just learned recently about Defiant, and I have so many questions for you about, you know, why Defiant came to be, what you even do with Defiant, and also just so many questions about all the CRO, CVO, CXO, CJOs that you see all over the place, and I guess kind of how you look to be in that space. So yeah, I would love if you could tell our listeners a bit more about yourself and why you started Defiant.
Sure. So, I mean, let's maybe touch on the acronyms piece.
Yes.
They are a nightmare, and I will try not to use any if I can help it, but they just slip into conversation. So, I am a strategic consultant, and I work with D2C, I've already slipped into it, direct-to-consumer e-commerce brands, helping them on their growth. So I started Defiant back in January of this year. So it's something relatively new. I've run agencies before, and I sold my last agency back in 2017, end of 2017, and vowed that I'd never do it again. And I figured, actually, do you know what? I'm going to be an employee and I'm going to go and do that. And that's what I'm going to do. And I ended up working in insurance. Let's not even go there. And then then I found my home, really, working in like a couple of Shopify Plus agencies. And being an employee was really difficult. It was really hard, you know, letting other people make calls. They set direction. They do all of these things. And I don't know, I'm probably a bit of a maverick and, you know, have lots of my own thoughts and ideas about how things should be done. And probably like every entrepreneur out there, I thought, you know what, I can do this better. Yeah. So I set up Defiant, and really it came about because having worked in these agencies, I could see the trap that I felt they were in trying to offer a whole host of services to merchants, you know, wanting to do everything from like acquisition and social and SEO through to like design and dev and email marketing, and then layering in strategy on top of it. And they were just trying to do so much, and I could see the difficulty from the merchant's standpoint, where they're trying to understand exactly what this agency does, and they're trying to grow, but they're trying to mitigate risk, and there's a whole, you know, especially in Shopify, there's a whole ecosystem of tech partners and platforms and providers, and it's a really tangled web. And so I wanted to simplify the solution a little bit and say, you need strategy in whatever business you're running, but why is it always locked into a design and dev agency or an email marketing agency or any of these things? Let's pull it out and make it a standalone service on its own that you can add to your mix of agencies or partners to layer in and really kind of help drive a return on investment from all of your spend. You know, somebody who's not got a vested interest in doing a certain amount of development work or selling a certain amount of ad spend or any of these things, I'm completely disconnected from all of them and can independently advise merchants on where you can place your efforts to get the greatest return on investment. So that's really kind of how it all came about. Layer that in with me being difficult to manage and all of those things. It birthed itself, really.
That is such a moment of self-awareness, but I can relate to it 100%. As you know, someone who has worked in-house like you and agency like you, and now kind of going off in like an entrepreneurial direction, I really echo a lot of what you just said. And I think it's funny that you started Defiant this year, because I'm seeing a lot of people come out and start their own independent consulting practices in all of these different much needed areas of optimization. So obviously you found a really good spot in and a good need for customer value optimization. But I really kind of want to know, in your words, how you define CVO and how it's really different from maybe conversion rate optimization. We see customer journey optimization. We see customer experience optimization. How do you see CVO differ from those other C's?
For me, it's really an amalgamation of all of those C's. CVO, customer value optimization, really is pulling lots of those together. So it's taking a holistic view across acquisition, conversion, customer experience, retention, all of these things, rather than them being standalone. It's pulling them all together because they all relate to one another. Looking at conversion rate optimization, very traditionally agencies or consultants will look at solely increasing conversion rate. And that's great to a certain extent, but at what cost? There's always a trade-off. And how does the customer experience play out across acquisition, conversion, and retention? Is that seamless? Is the messaging coherent and consistent? So for me, it's about tying lots of almost disparate disciplines, pulling them all together, but looking at the business and saying, how much value can you provide to your customer? Yes, there's the flip side of that about how much value you can extract from them. But if you start to change your mentality as a merchant into thinking, how can I provide value for my customers? They'll find a way to extract it. And in doing that, you probably hit better customers because you're targeting them better, because you're defining who they are and what they're buying. And just your understanding of that relationship goes so much deeper, rather than viewing it as a transactional relationship. This goes into actually creating a meaningful relationship between brand and consumer, where loyalty starts to come into play, where price is less of a motivator, and all of the challenges that merchants face on a day-to-day basis start to get smaller and smaller as they get smarter and smarter. Like, very often I compare it with the dating scene. you don't go on a blind date and you sit down at the table or meet somebody at the bar and propose to them. I mean, mm-hmm. maybe some people do, but
wait, that's never happened to you before?
Hey, I'm hanging out for it.
Good luck.
I'm not sure what my other half would say about that. But most people don't do that. Most people don't propose as soon as they've met somebody. Whereas when we translate that into an online transaction, what happens when you visit an e-commerce store, within seconds, there's a pop-up saying, do you want a discount? Do you want to do this? Do you want to sign up for our email newsletter? Do you want to... Whoa. Mm-hmm. Like, time out. Mm-hmm. Let's get to know each other a little bit. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I like you and your product. I don't know if I buy into you as a brand. I don't know if our ethos matches. I don't know if my values are the same as your values. So it's about creating that longer term relationship. And I think it's just a big shift in mindset. So customer value optimization really is about changing your view on how you want to sell and pulling in then all these other disciplines and optimizing each one of those. You know, I'm quite vocal on LinkedIn and things like that. And I bash conversion rate optimization quite a lot. And apologies to everybody out there who does conversion rate optimization. It's not personal. And I don't have an actual hatred of it, because it is really important. It's a key part of mm-hmm. customer value optimization. But you got to understand the intricacies of it and the relationship that one metric has with all of the others that, you know, that are around. So all the haters, don't jump straight on my LinkedIn. And
yeah, I don't think you have to worry about that, Jason. I work in CRO and I'm always shitting on CRO. So you're not alone in that. You brought up so many interesting things there, and something that I think about a lot.
This is Roma Santiago from Experiment Nation. Every week we share interviews with and conference sessions by our favorite conversion rate optimizers from around the world. So if you like this video, smash that like button and consider subscribing. It helps us a bunch. Now back to the episode.
As someone who does conversion rate optimization is, you know, let's say, for example, I'm working with a client and I notice that their checkout rate is horrible, but I go and I Google them and I see, oh, their Trustpilot reviews are like a 1 out of 5 stars, but it's just a couple, it's a very low volume of poor reviews. So then I start kind of talking to clients about, oh, well, maybe you should be integrating this into your like post-purchase drip campaigns, where you encourage happy customers to leave a review so that your Trustpilot is now a bit more like reflective of the good experience your customers are actually having. Does customer value optimization take into account other channels like lifecycle and CRM and like reviews aggregators? What does that look like in terms of the disciplines that you work with?
Absolutely, it does. I think reviews and people's sentiment is a huge driver for future behavior, not just their own behavior, but other consumers' behavior. And being able to capture that and distill that into something actionable that brands can actually deal with and start to address issues. It's great. Everybody loves getting 5-star reviews and all of these things, but you don't learn very much from 5-star mm-hmm. reviews. Mm-hmm. When you start to get 3-star reviews and 2-star reviews, and mm-hmm. God help us if you get 1-star review, we need to be able to do something with these. But feeding that back into, you know, a customer service portal or any of these things is enormously helpful and valuable. But when it starts to get really powerful is when we layer in the personalization aspect and the segmentation piece, and how you don't want to treat all your customers the same. If you have your top tier customer who is spending regularly with you and they part with a lot of cash, and then they leave you a 3-star review, anybody else leaving you a 3-star review might not be the end of the world. If that person's leaving a 3-star review, I want an automated trigger in there that sends a message straight to customer service that says, you need to get on the phone to this person because something's gone horrendously wrong that they're not happy with, and they are worth X to us. Mm-hmm. Somebody else who comes on and doesn't spend very often and isn't particularly valuable to the business, if they leave a 3-star review, I'm not going to give them the same service because it's not in my interests in terms of time and money and all of these other things to be able to provide that. Mm-hmm. So we want to capture every aspect of somebody's experience, you know, their sentiment and all of these things, to be able to provide the best possible experience for your ideal customer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is where the segmentation piece and the data behind the data excites me and probably bores a lot of other people, but this is where the magic kind of really happens for me, because when we can start to look at somebody's customer lifetime value, you know, I see lots of people online talking about a customer lifetime value. For me, for every single store, you should have multiple figures for customer lifetime value based on your segmentation of your customer base. Because you need to know how much each one of them is worth to you, how much you can afford to spend to acquire more people like that, how much you can afford to spend on retaining that customer. You know, and in those retention efforts will come things like reviews and customer service and, you know, how quickly you want to respond to any of those things. Because it all costs money. So I'm only going to really heavily invest in the people who are worth the most for me. And they're the people whose data I'm kind of interrogating most often. But then I'm also running other campaigns and other data sets to be able to say, okay, how can I convert somebody from my second or third tier? How can I push them up in terms of their value? How can I provide value to these people so that they can start to extract it, so I can get my product in their hands, so they can refer, so that they can do all of the good things and the good behaviors that we want them to exhibit? How can we facilitate that? And then how can we just, like children, how can we ignore the bad behavior and, you know, encourage the good? So it's really all encompassing, you know. Mm-hmm. It goes from the kind of tactile dealing with customers, all those touch points and everything that's involved there, but also then all of the hard data that every single merchant, regardless of size and scale and whatever else, every single merchant is sitting on a gold mine, because if you have customers, you have information and you have data. You just have to know how to mine it. Mm-hmm. And how to look through it and to know what you're looking for. So that's where it gets exciting. Mm-hmm. You know, and we can talk about unit economics, and we can talk about, you know, ideal customer profiling, we can talk about RFM segmentation, you know, all of these things start to become enormously valuable. And then you can put in buying habits and products. You know, some of the products you sell are shit. And you have to be able to let go of them. And you might think that it's great, but the market doesn't like it or want it or any of these things, or you haven't found the niche for that. So it's about having an honest conversation.
So very intrigued to hear about that. I definitely want to ask you about your approach to CBO and just your whole process in general. So we are definitely going to touch upon that. But you just mentioned something really interesting there about sometimes, you know, you have to have these difficult conversations with, I'm assuming this would be a client. Sometimes you have to let go of a product that the market just does not want. How often do you come across those difficult conversations with a client that you're, or someone that you're working with, in which you have to speak on behalf of the customer and the market, and you're just kind of the messenger, but you're giving them the advice they don't necessarily want to hear, but they need to hear?
pretty often.
Oh.
I would say every client has a product. Every client has a star product, right? They have that one thing that people come to them for, and it's their absolute hero product. They sell out of it, or they sell it regularly. It might not make them the largest margin of all of their product base, but they sell enough of it that it really makes a difference to their mm-hmm. business. And that's the one thing that their customers come to them for. On the flip side of that, they have the product that nobody buys, and they thought it was a good idea to add it as an additional product because they probably had a really good idea that they wanted to pump up their average order value, and it's rubbish.
Yeah.
And, but the founder or the owner or the e-com manager says, yeah, but 5 people bought it last month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or everybody's doing this. All our competitors are offering this, so we have to get on this. Yeah.
Exactly. But then you look at the data and you say, okay, fine. You sold however many of those things, but those customers have never come back.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got a toxic product, effectively. Mm-hmm. You've got a product that is just killing your lifetime value because people have been really happy. They've been ordering, and then they receive that product. And we've all been there as well. You know, you order a product from somewhere and you just think, oh, this is awful. It could be quality. It could any number of things.
Mm-hmm.
And you just think, oh, I'm done. I'm going to go to a competitor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that cutthroat that customers will leave after one bad product. And the problem is they usually don't tell you.
Mm-hmm.
They won't come back and review it. They just silently quit.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I don't have to have that many brutal conversations. but probably every single client, we have to have a conversation that says, mm-hmm. okay, maybe we should scale back on this product, or maybe we should cut it, or maybe just turn off your ad spend on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, stop pushing it. If somebody wants to, buy it and find it, more power to them.
Mm-hmm.
But let's not push it as a business, and then we can quietly turn it off later.
Mm-hmm. I relate to that a lot. My favorite client. I'm not working with them right now, but they had moved away from their bread and butter product, which really was the money maker. And I think they wanted to try and introduce products that are subscription eligible, because everybody hears subscription is where it's at for lifetime value. You have to make things subscription, and it just wasn't there for them. And I felt kind of limited in as a CRO strategist saying, oh, we'll only optimize one product and not the other, but the other product will use it as an upsell or cross sell. There are also almost kind of those moments where I had to tell the client, like, we have to focus on where your revenue is going to be. And also, this product alone is not going to keep customers coming back and back and back. It's just the revenue's not there. And it's also just a product that you can get anywhere else. And it's pulling people further away from the cash cow, the best seller. So that was kind of relatable to me right there. One thing that I noticed looking on your website is that some of your methods are very similar to conversion optimization.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that, you do some similar user research tactics. So I think I saw surveying, I think reviews mining, I think I've also seen. But I really want to know what your whole approach is, your methodology, what goes into it. And I'm specifically intrigued by ideal customer profiles, because you talk about this quite a bit. So, yeah, I would love to hear more about that.
Yeah, I guess there's so many synergies, with what we do. And at some point, I do sit and do just almost pure conversion rate optimization with clients, and work with them on those sorts of things. But the process really is a case of understanding the business challenges and the business goals, and taking a step back from just their site metrics and saying, okay, you know, you want to achieve whatever the revenue number is you want to achieve. That means let's work backwards and then start to plug in some of the metrics that are going to help us achieve that. Some of them are going to be direct metrics like conversion rate or average order value or purchase frequency or any of these sorts of things. And some are going to be indirect metrics. So some are going to be, okay, let's have a look at your reviews. Let's have a look at your shipping. Let's have a look at your unit economics. Let's take a look at what your customer base looks like. Let's see how much you're spending on acquisition. Let's see whether that is competitive. Let's start to look at layering some of these numbers. So I want to work out customer lifetime value numbers, and then I want to run that in a ratio with acquisition cost. And then I don't just want to know it, I want to leverage that number. So I want to be able to take that and say, okay, the objective is to grow market share aggressively. All right, let's dial that in so that we are potentially less profitable because we're spending more on acquisition. But in acquiring those customers, we're growing our market share and squeezing our competitors. If we're smart, you know, we can then kind of go full circle and say, let's have a look at ideal customer profiling, which is an enormous part of the value optimization piece, because I don't want to optimize this business and this store for everybody. I want to optimize it for our ideal customer. And that might be exactly the same as your competitors. It might be slightly different. The chances of them being identical are so slim, because everybody plays in a slightly different space. There's probably overlap, and that's where you're going to fight for, you know, acquisition and market share. But there's a niche that is carved just for you, and you've got to find it, and you've got to find those people and talk to those people and only those people. So all of that information lies in your retention data. So all of the customers who have already bought from you, that information sits in there. And this is the proverbial goldmine that I spoke about earlier. Yeah, it's full of some crap as well, but you don't dig for gold and just dig up gold. You've got to be able to take a pan full of that and like sift through it and figure out, okay, what does our ideal customer look like in this? And we'll get rid of all the others and stop communicating with them the way we've been communicating with them. And I'm quite brutal with my clients, and they often laugh at how brutal I am about it. It's either they're going up the value chain or they're going out of the value chain. Mm-hmm. I'm not happy with people stagnating in, unless they're in that top tier, I'm not happy with them kind of sticking in there. There needs to be constant movement. A client recently turned around to me and said, "Oh, we've been desperately trying to cling on to like all of our email subscribers and all of why,
mm-hmm.
why? Like yeah. if they're dead weight. If they're not buying from you, then they're costing you money."
Mm-hmm.
So there's the approach for me is about saying, okay, what's your hard data? What are your business objectives? What do your unit economics look like? How much money are you really making? Do you know? I mean, the scary thing is a lot of merchants don't know
mm-hmm.
what their gross margin is. Well, if you don't know your gross margin, how do you know how much you can afford to
mm-hmm.
to spend on acquiring somebody? Why are you giving them a 10% discount when they just come to the site?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that you've just chopped your margin by like 25% and giving them 10% off. All of these kind of fundamental business numbers, lots of people fall down on. But once you've got that foundation in place, then everything else becomes so much easier. And I think that's where CVO starts to win out over just focusing on one particular area, because it says, okay, I've got an understanding of my business. I've got an understanding of my market and who I want to target in that market. I know how much I can spend to acquire them profitably. I know that if I want to up that spend because I want to squeeze out my competitors or I want to increase market share, I know how I can do that because I can make the numbers work for me. And then equally on the flip side, do you know what? Maybe I'm the market leader and I can afford to just kind of sit here and get fat on the profits. Or, well, what if I'm not spending enough? What if I think there's more growth to be done and all of these other things? There's so many data points that this now gives me to be able to run a constant health check on a business and say, okay, if you want to invest more, this is where you're going to get the greatest return. Okay, fine. We've done that. The data's now shifted. So we need to switch our efforts from acquisition to retention. Or, you know, we now need to start getting people into repurchasing. So are there replenishables that people need? Are there supplementary products that people will start to need after a certain period of time? Or is there just simple education that we can give to our customers that will help them utilize the products that they've bought, which might then turn them into evangelists and they start referring customers and all of these sorts of things? So it's a complete holistic view, but it always starts with business numbers, not site numbers.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that was so informative. Thank you. I really appreciate that. And then just thinking about what the ideal customer profile looks like in the businesses that you work with, do you ever encounter situations in which each ideal customer profile has different success metrics when you're actually trying to improve their lifetime value or improve their retention? Like, does that happen often where, first of all, that there's even more than one ideal customer profile, and that two, that the success metrics vary between the different profiles?
Absolutely. I think there's probably more than one ideal customer profile, you know, for each business. If you just go fishing in one pond, you're going to exhaust that quite quickly. Whereas if you have a few different customer profiles that you target in different ways, you know, you tailor your approach and spend and time to each of those profiles within your business, then you can start to manipulate them and grow each of those. And they do have different data points and data sets that are relevant to each of them. So for some profiles and customers, it might be revenue might be one of the keys. It might be average order value. It might be purchase frequency. You know, is this customer coming back and buying regularly? Their average order value might be quite low, but they're coming back regularly. They're engaged. Their value is going to be high because their frequency and their recency is up there. Whereas others, it might be actually they're not spending that much, but they're referring. That's a free lead. Like, when you look at how much you're spending to acquire somebody, quite often it can be negative on the first purchase. Whereas if a certain customer profile is referring you to their friends and family and these sorts of things, then they have a value. You just might not see it on the balance sheet attributed to them. It might be attributed to others, but you've got to be able to find that link. And then you have like the superstars within every business that they order regularly, they spend a lot of money, they're brand evangelists, but they're unicorns. You don't find them every day. You might grow them and develop them over time. You might stumble across some and get lucky and acquire a few and whatever else. But most of the time, we don't focus on acquiring those people because, you know, you really are looking for a needle in a haystack. Unless you've massively dug into your data set and you have a complete grasp on, okay, this is this particular ideal customer profile. I'm going to spend a ton of money acquiring them. And do you know what? I might not break even on them until like purchase 3 or purchase 4. But the data says typically they're going to purchase 12 times and they're going to stick with me for 15 years. And their average order value is going to be high. So I can afford to do that. But unless you know some of those numbers right at the beginning, you know, you're not going to know. But yeah, absolutely. I'd go for multiple customer profiles with relevant data points against each one. And that is completely bespoke to every single business. You know, even if they're in the same category and selling the same products and all of these things, you're still going to have different data points against those customers because the customer base is different.
Mm-hmm. What do you find are the best data sources to learn those traits of the ideal customer profile?
I mean, Shopify gives you great data straight off the bat. It doesn't always marry with Google Analytics, which is slightly difficult.
Nothing does.
But, you know, you kind of got to find your way in there. I use a tool called OmniConvert. Mm-hmm. And you know of OmniConvert?
Oh, yes. They are, okay. I think our latest episode of the podcast was an OmniConvert interview. So, yes, we are very well aware.
Yeah. So, in terms of the data that provides and pulls, and it's incredible, absolutely incredible, the depth that you can start to drill down to in there. And it's all automated, which is amazing. You know, it's pulling it straight from your Shopify store, or you can plug it into, you know, other platforms, and it will go and pull all the historical data, and then it just starts to surface it in a dashboard that is easy to digest straight off. And then if you want to go deep, you can go deep. You know, you can really start to dig into whatever metric and angle and layer you want, and you can then start to marry that with other metrics so that you get this kind of three-dimensional view of your entire customer base. And then you can start to dig into each individual segment, smaller and smaller, you know, down to a super granular level. And for me, that's where I get most of my data. And I probably spend far too much of my day, you know, looking at those sorts of things. I mean, I've got two screens sitting beside me, and one has a Shopify dashboard up on it, and the other one actually has OmniConvert open for the same store, and I'm running through that data because I was in the middle of doing some reporting this afternoon. So
I love it never stops. So this all sounds really awesome, but it's hard to kind of put the pieces together in a practical sense. I know that you had a success story with a pain cream. So could you kind of explain to our listeners, like, we're 5 years old, just how you took that approach that you just described to us and then turned it into a win for this skin cream company?
Sure. So these guys are big in retail, and they want to be able to increase their margin ultimately. So they know that selling D2C is a surefire way for them to be able to cut out the retailers and increase their margin. But there are other challenges, obviously, that come on board with that. Something that, you know, the retailer, when you're in there, will handle customer acquisition. You know, they're paying rent on on a store, and they make sure that there's footfall and that they're driving, marketing and sales activities to get people into that store. And then serendipitously, you end up with somebody passing your product and they say, hey, actually, I need that. I didn't come in for it, but that's what I need. Or I've come in to buy this particular product and yours is right next to it, so I'm going to pick that up. All of those things are taken care of for you by the retailer. When you decide to go D2C, you have all of these headaches mm-hmm. that now become yours. And not only that, you're competing with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. you've got to really take a look at, okay, out of my new increased margin that I'm going to get from selling this direct to a consumer, what's the difference between that and what I get from the retailer? Okay, in there's really the money that I've got to play with for my D2C offering. And it's about saying, okay, where do I put it? This was effectively the question. What do we do with that money, that difference? Where do we spend it on acquisition? Do we spend it on retention? How does subscription fit into this model? How are we going to make sure that we're targeting the right people? All of these big questions. And so they did a lot of TV advertising. And there's a lot of traffic generated, off the back of the TV advertising, which is really non-traditional. I can't remember the last time I watched an advert on TV. But people watched and they would go on and they'd hit the site, and then the problem start of, okay, how do we get them to convert? Do we take them to the website in general? Do we take them to a specific landing page? So we started running A/B tests on the best converting journey, effectively. So, if we're sending people to the landing page, how do they convert? If we're sending people just to the generic site, how do they convert? What messaging are they receiving on those sites? Then once they have converted, what are we doing to retain them? What do those people look like moving forwards? I mean, really interestingly, their site was, we ended up running at about just below 5% conversion rate on average for their site. When we used the landing page, we were up at nearly 20% conversion rate, which was no real surprise. Mm-hmm. But it's when you start to look at the longer term play. So in seeing their conversion rate go up, we saw the average order value come down, which was slightly alarming for them, but we also seen purchase frequency go up. So people are ordering more often, but they're spending slightly less. Actually, that's okay, because we're watching that customer lifetime value number as well. So we're managing this all the way through. We're looking at messaging. We're looking at how easy it is for somebody to purchase and check out. What are the friction points that are in there? How can we remove as many of them as possible? A big part of revenue that was driven was subscription, and making sure that we got subscription options available to people early enough in their journey so that they understood. Now, I have mixed feelings about subscriptions, and we can probably touch on that in a minute, but we saw in 5-6 months, we saw subscriber rates go from about 100 subscribers to over 500 subscribers. And the churn was reasonably low. You inevitably have the people signing up because they get the discount, 5%, 10% discount, whatever's being offered, which is where my bugbear comes in. But lots of those people were sticking around for 4+ months in that subscription model. So their recurring revenue and predictable revenue started to get a lot easier for us to manage. So they can then start to place that into their acquisition with more confidence. And just being able to understand that was a game changer for them. Not only that, they were constantly adding to people who have purchased. So their email marketing efforts and retention efforts were growing exponentially. So we were just able to retarget those people who hadn't subscribed. We were able to see consumption rates, and we could then start targeting them with well-timed emails to say, hey, it might be time to, order again. And then bringing them back on site with personalization. So knowing that they have ordered a specific product in the past, we can show them that same product. We can then also show them upsells on that. So, hey, you saw how great that one was. Why not try this next one that's a bit stronger? Why not try this other product that might help with some of the other things that you've got going on? And all of that really just started to build a whole host of data. And then you layer in things like quizzes. We'd ask customers to almost tell us what they were using the product for and how they were using it and how much and how often. And all of a sudden we had cut through on who was using the product and how they were using it and why they were using it. So the education piece then started to run from an email marketing standpoint. So, okay, cool. You've got tennis elbow, you've got sore knees, like you've got sore back, whatever it is. Here's another product that's going to help with that. Or did you know that applying the cream in this time, at this time or in this certain way might help ease some of your pain? All of those things just keep that customer way more engaged, and they just start coming back. The return rates start going up. And with that, in 6 months, their revenue went up over 60%.
That's awesome. And you really had to use a few different channels there to get to this. It sounds like you were leveraging, life cycle data. It sounds like you also take into account acquisition costs. So you are really diving into paid media as well. It sounds like this is also a mixture of vanilla on-site conversion optimization. So it does sound like this is kind of a merging of all of these different channels in one. And I don't know how you would be able to get to these sort of wins with just one channel. I don't know if that's even possible. So that's awesome. I'm really interested in what you're putting together. So definitely going to keep an eye on Defiant in the next few months and see what else you guys come up with. But yeah, this has been a great episode. Thank you so much, Jason. I've learned personally so much about customer value optimization. I'm sure our listeners will too. It's not really talked about all that much, at least in my circles. I think everyone is still kind of hung up on CRO, but it's really awesome to get this perspective.
It's been really good. It's been really fun.
Is there anything that you'd like our listeners to know, that you have something going on?
That's a big question, right? I am working hard behind the scenes right now, doing lots of collaborations. So working with lots of partners, lots of agencies on some thought leadership pieces, on some workshop pieces. And then somebody even mentioned like doing a podcast or something along those lines. I've heard they're pretty good. So I think it's definitely, it's something in the works. Watch this space. There's lots of content coming out. So I want to try and grow people's knowledge around CVO and help everybody see the light that conversion rate optimization is great, and it might fix things in the short term, but it's 2023. We need to go long term.
Mm-hmm.
And I think If you want to build a community, CVO is the way around it. And the community is where the money's at. So you want to build a community. But yeah, I think I'm doing everything I can to educate as many people as I can and talk about CVO and get all the partners and all the merchants and everybody excited about their customer base and their gold mine that they're sitting on top of.
Love it. That's great. Where is the best spot to get all of this information from you, all of this good content?
You'll find me on LinkedIn probably way more than I should be. So hit me up on LinkedIn. That's where you'll find me bashing people from CRO, swearing regularly, and cursing at my children for giving me far too many gray hairs.
As one does. Thank you so much, Jason. Is there anyone that you would recommend that we interview next?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a really good question. There is a fantastic group of guys doing some work called Relo, and they are helping people manage their subscriptions and really kind of get great value out of that. So you probably want to hit Harry from Relo up or Harvey. And you know, they are killing it right now in terms of helping people reduce churn and making sure that everybody's getting a well-timed replenishment message. And those guys are just very, very cool.
Awesome. I want to ask them all about subscriptions and particularly how to make them not suck, because I encountered a lot of crappy subscription programs or products that have no business being subscription. That would be something I definitely want to ask them. So
they are there saving the subscription model, come hell or high water, for everybody who has one. So if you're not using Relo on top of your subscription, then you're definitely missing a trick.
Awesome. Well, it's a dirty job. Someone's got to do it. So glad it's them. Well, thank you so much, Jason. This is a great chat. And yeah, all the best with Defiant and excited to see what comes.
Thank you very much.
All right. So that was our episode.